Welcome back to Schnepps Connects. Thanks for listening in on our podcast. And I want to make sure you know that Schnepps Connects goes beyond podcasts. We also host monthly Schnepps Connects business meetings, networking, and a club. So check out schneppsconnects.com. And of course, you're listening to us where you can find us on all major podcast platforms, as well as our website, podcastmedia.com. Today, I'm joined by L. Joy Williams, who's a nationally recognized political strategist, civil leader, and champion for civil rights and voter engagement. L. Joy serves as president of the NAACP New York State Conference and chair of Higher Heights PAC, where she works to advance equity, build political power, and drive meaningful change. She's also the host of Hashtag Sunday Civics, the award-nominated podcast, helping people better understand how government works and how to make their voices heard. So, L. Joy, great to have you, and thank you so much for joining.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So you host your own podcast. You know how this goes. And I think I'd love to just start off by, you know, you sharing, how did you get involved in politics and advocacy and really the overall fight for civil rights?
Well, it was my backup. Okay. When I was younger, I was going to work in the fashion industry. And eventually I would say I want to be the first U.S. senator slash fashion designer, because I recognize even nice. As a young person that you needed to be independently wealthy in order to run for U.S. Senate. And I applied to get into FIT, didn't get in. And I was like, oh, I guess I'll do my backup, which was politics. And so I've been organizing even as a student and on social issues, on civil rights issues, and then got bit by the political bug, knowing how some of the things that I wanted to move for change required, you know, to engage with elected officials and the political process when I was in college, and so have been there ever since, sort of in the community organizing political space.
That's so great to hear. You know, listen, a lot of young people don't know what they want to do. And it's good to hear that you found your passion early, whether or not it was your intended first path. You obviously had that passion, which was really amazing. And I'd love to hear how you really, you know, climbed the ladder to leadership and really what ultimately led you to the presidency of the NAACP New York State Conference.
Well, it is not a traditional path, I can say. Quite often when I'm talking to, you know, rooms full of young people, and they kind of want the cheat code of, you know, well, how do I get to be you?
Right.
And I was like, one.
Quick satisfaction.
Right. I'm like, don't try to be me. But my path was unorthodox in the fact that, like, in every space that I went to, if I think about it, often people would say in the different spaces, oh, that's not how that's usually done. Or like, that's not what you do, you know, to get here. And it seemed, for me, it was just like, okay, well, that's how I got here. So, and that has been, even in this role I am now, that has been the story of my life in being in college and kind of have the independent spirit of, I want to learn the thing first. And then afterwards, you could tell me, oh, no, that's not how you're supposed to do that. I'm like, well, I already know it now. So that was, I wanted to learn how to work with young people. So as a college student, I, you know, got connected to a community organization and I ran the summer camp because I wanted to learn the administration of, you know, working a nonprofit as well as working with young people. I wanted to learn more about the continent of Africa. And so I went out and found my own internship at the Africa America Institute when I was in college to, you know, work and see how does the UN interact with, you know, organizations and NGOs and, you know, even though they're based here. And so I would, all through my career, sort of find these opportunities. This is what, you know, what I have interest in. This is what I want to learn. Quite often spent a lot of my early career reading, a lot of my 20s reading in parks, reading in libraries, reading just in my apartment, or going to clubs sometimes to read, to really learn more about the world and how things worked. And, you know, that kind of foundation of being curious and wanting to learn and then willing to volunteer, you know, from community organizations to political campaigns, I would find out information and then find people who were already working on those things, not just creating something new, but find people who were working on those things and then say, here, I'm a young person with energy and new ideas, and but I want to do with you, right? I want to learn
Love it.
from you. And that's how I came up in the ranks in political organizing in Brooklyn and Bedford-Stuyvesant specifically, and working with community organizations, the local political club, volunteering, learning from elders like Al Vann and Annette Robinson and Esmeralda Simmons, learning from those folks, but then also contributing my time and my energy and my commitment. And then when it was time for me to lead different aspects, be it I was reorganized and activated the Brooklyn Young Dems at one point, and then to the
Okay.
NAACP as the president of the Brooklyn branch, which ultimately continuing that organizing led me to be here as president of the New York State Conference now.
You're a go-getter. That's it, plain and simple. I
Yeah.
love it.
So, I mean, between that and then sort of the parallel role, right, like of community organizing and community engagement with national political work, going to volunteer, but also then being a staffer on different campaigns and taking trainings and learning more to make myself valuable to communities and institutions is what got me here today.
So everyone knows the NAACP for fighting for equality, freedom. I mean, it's been around for over a century. What is your role, or what are some of your goals when it comes to your role here in New York?
Yeah, that's a really good question because, everybody knows that the NAACP exists and they believe they know what we do. Yeah, y'all fight for justice and y'all fight, people have like individual things that they may think. And so I like to sum up what our role is that the NAACP, our role here in New York is to advocate, agitate, and litigate on behalf of Black New Yorkers.
I love it.
All
So
right.
how
So we advocate, right? Like, so, whether it's with elected officials, corporations, community organizations, or things like that, advocating for, increased representation, resources into community, things of that nature. And then when those things don't work politely, we may agitate and use tactics like bringing attention to inequities, demonstrating, doing some sort of like outward protest or a marker. And then if those don't work, we do my favorite thing, which is to go into courts and litigate. And for instance, now we're suing the NYPD over their numerous stops of Black and Brown New Yorkers. We are suing the Justice Department in Syracuse because they are ending the consent decree for the fire and police stations in Syracuse that has been impacted that community there. And when I was Brooklyn president, we sued and got struck down here in New York, the line woman ban, which said you couldn't even give a person water who was waiting in the line to vote. So those are, the tools and things that we use to build and maintain thriving Black communities in New York State. So that's our role.
Oh, thank you for making that clear. And it's obviously, critically important to achieving your goals and making sure that the community is respected and then has their rights like everyone else. Redistricting has become a huge issue, more so, I guess, in other states than here in New York, but I imagine it's going to have an impact everywhere across the country. What is your take on that, and how are you playing a role in that fight now? And how do you see that really changing the landscape after that Supreme Court decision?
Well, one, I want to step back and sort of level set history for us, right? Every single time in this country, this is, the 20-year-old and the, 19-year-old me, reading and studying, right? You can chart this history here in the country that any time that we reach a point where we are getting to our true goal of a democracy that is equitable for everyone, there is a retrenchment. There is a thought that equity and inclusion of everyone means that someone else is losing. And that is the moment that we are in right now. We're getting to a point, we weren't perfect, but we were getting to a point of an equitable democracy. And one of those things that are often pulled back is voting rights. We saw this after Reconstruction in this country when people were afforded, all people were afforded the right to vote. And you saw the immediacy of people who were previously enslaved now being full citizens and able to build communities, invest, and become elected officials themselves and vote and combine and work in coalition with, working class whites and, poor communities and bind together to create a more equitable democracy in local towns, particularly in the South. And then there was the retrenchment, right? That's how we get Jim Crow laws. That's how we get to the point where we then have to go to the what we know as the modern civil rights movement, where NAACP and a number of organizations were working in the South regarding voting rights, because people knew that voting was tied to self-determination, was tied to having a more equitable democracy, was tied to everybody having representation and having a voice at the table. What we have now is that same type of retrenchment, where we got to a point where we were moving beyond, the divisions, and we were expanding democracy, expanding an equitable democracy everywhere with the election and then the governing of President Barack Obama. And folks couldn't take, right? We were, in their perspective, becoming a different country. No, we were becoming a more equitable democracy, the promise that the Constitution, states that we wanted to be. And so now we're in the point where people again are attempting to remake this country into a small, narrow country whose rulers or who the people who have a say so are of only one persuasion. And they're a small, dwindling part of the country. And I'm not talking about race. I'm talking about people who believe in equitable, more perfect union, right? Who believe in democracy, where everybody has an opportunity, where everybody has a voice and can be engaged in determining what's in the best interest of all people. And so now we have where people are changing the rules, right? Rigging the game, if you will, and in the form of creating racial gerrymandering to box out those districts and those places where people have greater say, and creating a narrow that only a certain type of people who think a certain kind of way, who believe a certain kind of thing, they should be the only ones that have power and influence in our country. We're rejecting that. And here in New York, we are rejecting that. We're standing up a coalition, a Fair Maps coalition, to beat back any attempts to diminish Black voting power in New York State, and also to bolster and make sure that New York is not overall discriminated against, that all people are in New York are not discriminated against by other states, taking power and rigging the game. And so that's what we're focused on during this process.
So, do you think that there is a path to fight back those changes right now? Because the Supreme Court making a decision is hard to get around. So, I'm
It
curious
is.
what you think the path is for the short term, because I'm sure this is going to be a long-term issue. It's not going
It
away
is a
tomorrow.
long-term fight. And, continuing with that same historical marker, right? It's a long-term fight. Democracy is not something you set and forget. It is something that you have to be active and participatory in for it to work. But in the
Sure.
meantime, similarly, we're going to continue not only on a state level, but on a national level. As you may have seen, we are in litigation on, continuing in some of the actions that states are doing. But the other thing that we're doing is litigating, right? Advocating, but we're also engaging communities, because something that beats back voter disenfranchisement is increased voter engagement and voter
Sure,
turnout. And so what
absolutely.
we are doing is, while we are also fighting, right, in the courts, and we are also in the streets and knocking doors, not only here in New York, but in the South, and targeted to make sure we get the increased turnout that we need in order to win control of some of these state legislatures, as well as Congress, to actually implement legislation that beats back some of this, that being in the form of the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Act. on the federal level. We have a Voting Rights Act here on the state level, and a number of states are enacting their own voting rights, but we need it on the federal level. And then the long-term game, right, of course, is ensuring that we have a constitutional amendment of an affirmation of the right to vote, which we don't have. We have constitutional protections for those who cast a vote, but there is not in the Constitution an affirmative amendment for your right to vote. Your eligibility and everything is determined by the states. And so, that's a long-term fight, making sure that we have that. Similar, as I talked about, that historical retrenchment from the Reconstruction, a number of scholars refer to as the second founding of the country, of course, after the Civil War. And then, millions of people who were formerly enslaved now becoming full citizens in this country. And after this, it's going to require another founding of this country, of us looking at how do we prevent the destruction of our democracy and the continuation of a path forward to a more equitable one.
Let's talk about the state because the state budget's being hammered out as we're recording this podcast, literally. What are some issues in that budget that you're advocating on behalf of?
Sure. We are hyperly focused on our environment here in the state, making sure while, we understand that given the rising costs of everything, we still need a path forward to make sure that we are preserving the only planet we know, making sure that we have clean water, clean air, and emissions limits and things that preserve our way of life and preserve our life, period. Secondly, we're focused on education and making sure that our children have the resources necessary and that our schools have resources necessary. But then also ensuring that our children are not missing critical school time by them being suspended and out of school, so that we're part of the Solutions Not Suspension coalition in that aspect. Also, as immigration has become third rail in our politics at this point, and making sure that New York continues to be protective of our immigrant communities and the passage of New York for All is incredibly important as well. And then, last thing, and we've been focused on this as NAACP, while we have lost a lot of population of Black New Yorkers due to affordability, one of the other ways in which we are losing a lot of people and losing generational wealth is because of deed theft, of malicious actors deliberately stealing generational wealth and stealing homes from communities that are particularly focused on Black and Brown communities, particularly focused on our seniors, our most vulnerable populations. And we want to ensure that there is resources available for legal support for those families who are in danger of being evicted, who are in danger of losing their homes and their generational wealth, but making sure also that we have laws in place that protect people so they're not losing that as well. So those are just a few of the things that we are tracking and following as this process goes on.
It's a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, big issues. Share a little bit about the recently launched initiative, Black NY Forward.
Yes, since I became president, and it's just been over a year, people often ask, like, what's your vision? What are you going to do? And so this is my answer to that. Black New York Forward is our campaign, again, about organizing Black political power in New York State to ensure that we build and maintain thriving Black communities. And what that looks like, is similar to any of those issues that I talked about that we're tracking during the budget, right? Making sure we have an environment in which, Black communities do not have to suffer higher asthma rates because of the emissions that may exist. One of our branches is currently fighting an issue with a Goodyear plant, right, that is releasing highly toxic chemicals into the air. Making sure that all of these families and individuals who are losing health coverage because of Medicaid cuts, right, that how are we going to protect and ensure that people have the health insurance and have the resources necessary to preserve their life? How are we going to ensure that we have school systems and school districts that are meeting the needs of our children? Our Spring Valley and Nyack branches have been fighting the issues in East Ramapo, who have been stripping resources away from the public school system. system there that are primarily Black and Brown kids who are also been devastated by ICE issues in the state, where people are scared and terrified, while the resources in their school district have continually declined, right? All of those things impact whether we have thriving Black communities in New York. And so we're organizing around those issues, not just around an election, but in pulling people into the civic engagement process overall, with NAACP being the permanent infrastructure in their communities, so that we get to the point over the next couple of years, we have critical, elections and periods of engagement before we get to the census and then to the next redistricting cycle, the traditional
Right.
redistricting cycle in 2030 and 2030.
Well, you talked about education, and obviously that's critical, I mean, for the future of any community. Share a little bit about the Freedom School program and why that's so important a mission.
This is really critically important because Black New York Forward is sort of two halves of a whole. I think that phrase goes that way.
Sure, that works.
And it's the narrative power and our political power. So I talk about our political power, how we advocate on issues, how we advocate on the state budget, local budgets, how we organize in our communities to make sure we are helping to build the next generation of prime voters, right? So that's flexing our political muscle. The other important part is our narrative power. Well, how we talk about ourselves, what our children and what our communities learn about ourselves and about each other. Quite frankly, most of the dialogue about Black New Yorkers is about how many of us have left, how many things are stolen, and violence, and all of those kinds of things, if you just do a scan of media headlines or things. But we know that there's more to that story about us. There is the vibrant history that exists of Black New Yorkers. We want our children to know and to feel empowered with. And so the Freedom School is a way on Saturdays to teach that history. That's not just, the history that you would learn about the collective African American experience, but specifically about a Black New York experience. And also, how do you take that pride in who you are, that pride in the story, in the history, in the narrative, and how you contribute to community? Right now, we have ambassadors as part of the program. So these are young people who are of the teenage age group, and they're
Smart.
learning how to advocate, how to build an advocacy campaign, steps to create that. They're building it through their own lens, through their own voice. And then they're going to take that campaign and lead that and talk to their peers and other elected officials. So getting them hooked early that, you may not be able to vote yet, but you still have a role and a voice, and people still represent you in City Hall, in the state legislature, in the governor's mansion. And you don't have to wait until you're an adult to require someone to respond to your issues that are supposed to represent you. And empowering them to have that civic voice and engagement even before they have the right to vote. So by the time they're engaged in the process, that's just one of the tools in their toolbox.
That's great. I mean, listen, I could tell you're a great communicator, and I'm sure in that leadership role, even utilizing your podcast, is really trying to make this civic engagement more accessible. Yet, there's a lot of disconnect that people feel with government. How are you thinking about that and getting people to be more engaged, either civically or politically?
This is a really important question because right now, particularly because of the recent Supreme Court decision, people are attempting to shame people who are not engaged in the process on a regular basis, people who don't vote. But we really, truly have a problem with apathy overall. And it's because people don't see how their lives will materially change depending on who's in office, whether it's, a mayor, a governor, or even the president. And the issues that they want to see prioritized, the issues that are impacting them on a regular basis, they don't see people speaking to. Additionally, people are not asking and not engaging people. Right? From an elected official standpoint, from candidate standpoint, they're only talking to people that they know vote, because that you have a defined time, defined amount of resources to be able to turn people out so that they can win elections. Now, you can say that's a good thing or a bad thing, but then who else's responsibility is it to really engage the total population, to engage those young people that I talked about? You represent them still, even if they haven't voted for you, even if they voted for someone else. And if you haven't taken the time to communicate, to engage, to ask them, what they think about a certain issue, this is their city, this is their state, right? Do you want a healthcare system that covers everybody? Do you want the ability to have cleaner air and clean water, right? Like, tell me what your opinion is so that I can try to represent you as much as possible with the issues that come before us to vote on or the budget that we want to vote on. People haven't been asked. People haven't been engaged. And so, therefore, people have taken themselves out of the process because clearly you can do this all on your own and it's not affecting me either way. At least that's what people believe, even though we know that not to be true. So, what it requires is for those who are in positions of leadership to be the bigger person. You, even if they haven't voted for you or, engaged in the process, you are required, to engage them in the process. And that's even the role that I believe, right? As NAACP president, we're going to knock on the doors. We're going to call people. We're going to talk to people and engage them and build that civic muscle that has been lax for some time. And that doesn't mean that we're just engaging them to win the midterms. We are engaging them for long-term civic engagement practice.
Every generation is very different from the one that came before it. What's your feeling in terms of the next generation of activists, organizers, leaders, and what would you say gives you hope about the future of civic engagement and civil rights overall?
Being in the room with those young people I mentioned at Freedom School gives me incredible hope. One, because, as a number of young people do, they have incredible passion about the small things they know, but they use their voices in a different way. They have greater tools to be able to share what they think, what they believe, and it's intuitive to them. Whereas, I'm a baby Xer, right? Like all of this stuff came of age as I was coming of age. But their fearlessness and their ability to communicate, what they're feeling, what they believe that society should be, I think we would do a service if we listen more to them. And figure out how we incorporate them early on and not wait until they come of age.
Well said. And let's hope that the next generation carries the baton, which I'm sure they will. I think they certainly can use technology in a very positive way if they want to. So, Eljoy, it's been a pleasure to get to know you a little bit better and for, all the advocacy that you do, which is terrific. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure.